Folks, I am really excited to talk about our newest sponsor for the coaching staff, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, also All-American Used Cars and Trucks. Two really, really good businesses. I'm going to start with Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. You know, it's hard to find a good mechanic. It's hard to find somebody that you trust. And, you know, long before this situation came about, we had been taking our cars to Ruiz for a year, year and a half, and they've done great, great work. They're honest. They're upfront. They can do everything. They, you know, take care of your motor, take care of your brakes, tires, oil, so simple stuff like oil changes, brake pads, mufflers, whatever you may need. Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust are going to take care of it for you. If you are in the Omaha area and you are looking for a quality, reasonably priced, customer-friendly situation, you're not going to regret giving Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust a chance here. They are located at 4839 North 90th Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68134. You can give Esmeralda a call up there. Her number is 402-317-2572. And they'll get you taken care of. I'm saying this as a customer. We literally do not bring our cars anywhere other than Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust for anything that we do from this point for the last year or two. So again, another business here, All American Used Cars or Trucks. If you're in the market for a used car or truck, go check out Juan Carlos's business there. 144th and I-80, 14706 Schooner Road here in Omaha. Go check it out here. If you're looking to exchange a car, buy, sell, trade, whatever it may be, you're going to get an honest deal from honest people. So go check out Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust and All American Used Cars and Trucks. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, the weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to the coaching staff, episode number 116. Along with me, as usual, is my main man along the frozen Cedar River in Iowa, is Mr. Tony D. Viss. Mr. Viss, how are you this fine Sunday evening?
Trying to thaw out. We just got back from supper about a half hour ago, and I feel like an ice cube. It is cold. How are things going for you?
We are well. I used a little bit of my Pizza Ranch experience. We had a little homemade pizza for supper tonight. It was as Jay Peterman would say, Tony, it was pretty good. You know, so where did the Visses go out to eat tonight?
Place called Irish Democrat. It's good. They've got some cheese wonton with a mustard sauce, kind of like I'm trying to think how I would describe this mustard sauce. Anyway, really, really good. And so it hit the spot.
Well, it's nice of you to take some of those a pen and a napkin royalties and spend them on Rita a little bit.
You know they can.
Well, speaking of royalty, we have some royalty here with episode number 116. You notice that transition? Yeah, it was. Numbers 16. One of the GOATs at one time, perhaps the GOAT, Joe Montana. Although, Tony, hot take, I would take John Elway over Joe Montana. That's just me.
But go ahead.
Yeah. two starting pitchers, Whitey Ford and Dwight Gooden, Dr. K. The Doc, yes, the good Doc. We've got four basketball players, Tony. All of them, four of them, all retired. Three of them, if they're not in the Hall of Fame, will be. I don't think the fourth is. Let's see here. Teammate of Kobe Bryant.
Pau Gasol.
There's one. Let's see here. Post player, Detroit Pistons. Detroit Pistons. And maybe Milwaukee Bucks.
Post player, Detroit.
1970s.
70s. Fun. Kent Benson.
Nope, not Ken Benson, the one guy that Larry Bird hated most in the NBA. You know why he hated Kent Benson? Bill Laimbeer, not Bill Laimbeer. Same initials, though.
No. Crap, I don't know that one.
Bob Lanier.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Not Bill.
Yeah. You know why Larry Bird hated Kent Benson so much?
Cheap shots?
Well, when Larry Bird was at Indiana for like 6 weeks, Kent Benson was on the team and he kept making fun of Larry Bird for being so poor. And Larry vowed that every time he was going to play against Kent Benson, he was going to go after him. Yeah.
I read Larry Bird's book, and I remember him talking about the dislike, but he did not go into detail on that one.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So there you go. So let's see here. Former, I think he's probably most known for his days with the Sacramento Kings. He was on the C-Web Vlade Divac Kings teams.
Is it Jason Williams?
Nope.
Mike Bibby?
It is not.
Doug Christie.
He's the one good player on the team you haven't mentioned yet. Peja Stojakovic. Yes, yep, there you go. And then former New York Knick, member of the great Knicks teams of the early 70s.
Dave DeBuscher.
Nope, but he was a forward along with Dave DeBuscher.
Phil Jeff.
You got one guess left.
Crap. Oh, crap. Because Walt Frazier been a guard. Bill Bradley.
Jerry Lucas.
That's who I said.
Yeah.
Jerry Lucas.
Yeah, you are incorrect, sir. So, all right. Well, hey, 2 out of 4 ain't bad. No, 1 out of 4. No, that was bad, Tony. That was bad. That was bad. That was bad.
Don't paint this. Yeah. Can't polish this one.
Yeah. You're paying next week for Rita. So, all right. Well, episode 116, and we are going to talk about igniting a struggling team. You know, we are at the point of the year, and really, you know, I got this from Tony. I got this from Indiana, you know, some of our blue bloods, Indiana, UCLA, North Carolina. Rutgers is obviously not a blue blood, but with the two stud freshmen that they have, a lot of people thought they were going to be a lot better, a lot faster than they have been. You know, if you do this long enough, you're going to be in a situation where you reach early to mid-January and just things aren't clicking. It's just not happening. And this, you know, this is the reason why you lay awake at night staring at your ceiling, because you can't figure out why things aren't clicking. Tony, I'm sure you've been there. I know I've been there.
Been there a few times.
Yeah. Yeah. I know for me, this would eat at me. It would obviously cause a lot of stress. And for me, for the most part, most of the time, it wasn't necessarily about the winning and the losing. It was about the vibe, the way we were working in practice. Why am I not reaching the players the way that I would like? Why are the relationships not clicking? Why are we not knowing, accepting, embracing, and excelling at our roles? You know, those are the things that ate away at me when I felt like the team was struggling. I'm guessing you're probably in that same boat.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, you have potential. And I think one of the things, the hardest as a coach, is when your team's underachieving. Mm-hmm. And as you're going through that, like you said, there becomes this deal where you start to have that inner nine about, hey, what can I do here? And like, you know, you just lay there, you stare at the ceiling, you have thoughts, you're throwing against the wall, seeing if something sticks. But yeah, I mean, there's a variety of things that you can do. And hopefully you press the right buttons, because, you know, I'd love to say they're all foolproof, but they're obviously not.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what you try to do, and I think we all come into each season, and this is something that I learned as I went through my career, Tony. I think one of the things that I got better at as the season went along was to try and stay steady from day one. And I really, the person I would say that was most influential for me with that was Bill Belichick. I mean, I studied a lot of Belichick, and I know there's pluses and minuses to the Belichick style. I get that. But, you know, one of the things I really took from him was just you've got to stay calm. You've got to stay steady. I know there were probably a couple of seasons early on in my head coaching career. If we lost two games in December, I thought the sky was falling, you know, that type of a thing. And, you know, the more and more I looked at it, it was just about staying steady and finding improvement, seeing growth both on and off the floor. And so for me, that steadiness, I think that's the first thing that you have to do. Now, you know, if the toothpaste is out of the tube right now on January 19th, you can't put it back in. But I think if you felt like you have not been like that this year and your team is struggling, next year, I think that's something that you think about from day one, is just don't get too up, don't get too down. Stay steady, stay steady, stay steady. And if you don't get too up, you don't get too down, then the ups and downs of the season don't seem as dramatic. I that would be my opening salvo, Tony.
I think one of the more overused words in sports is, you know, phrases I should say, is the process. But I think that's a part of the process, is the fact that you show up every day, you're ready to go to work. And then, you know, if you start acting like the sky is falling and, you know, you're making all these changes and there's really no rhyme and reason to them, and they can sense your panic, they're going to start to panic and things are going to go from bad to even worse. And so I think that, you know, that steady approach, show up each day so that they know what to expect and, you know, can get ready to get to work, if you will, and help improve. Because a lot of times it's not big major changes that you need to make, is these minor adjustments that can make big differences. But if you make these huge changes and you're making a bunch of them, it's hard to figure out which one actually is working and which of the other ones just kind of backfired on you. And so I think that's something to kind of keep in mind as well.
Mm-hmm. What's the first thing you got, buddy?
You know, one of the things I think about in that situation is the fact that, hey, if it's not going well, say you're at this point in the year right now, you're about halfway through your season. Maybe you expected at this point to be like, I don't know, 8-2, 7-3, something like that. You're 5-5 or 4-6 or whatever. You know, one of the things that you might need to do is to go back through and do some goal setting. You know, I think one of the things that's important is putting achievable goals out there that they can have some success with. You know, maybe you've been turning the ball over 15 times a game, and that's too many. And so, I mean, you got to make a good decision and put it at a number, you know, maybe it's 12 or 13, you know, instead of 15, but you've got to give them something that they can achieve. And then, you know, you've got to put those things out there that are short-term and attainable. And then I think that kind of gets their mojo back a little bit, if you will. And hopefully you can start to right the ship as you set those short-term, immediate goals that can be reached. And now they feel like they're having success, and maybe that mojo can be turned around rather quickly.
Yeah, and you had kind of mentioned it before, Tony, fixing that one thing at a time. If you're trying to fix everything at once, like you said just a little bit ago, it's hard for the kids to figure that out. Well, we got to rebound better. We got to take care of the ball better. Our execution has to be better, and we got to close out better. And we're going to work all those things. We're going to freak out every time we screw up any one of those things. You know, and pretty soon, you know, their heads are swimming. So I agree with you there. And if you can make it tangible. I agree with you there too, Tony. If you can make it tangible on that fix, fixing that one thing at a time. I think that's really good. You know, when I took over at my last job, it was, you know, there were a lot of things to make better. And, you know, we had to settle in on, and it was just all about ball security. Like, we can't put the ball in the basket unless we start taking care of the basketball. So here's how we take care of the basketball. It's going to be this consistent thing. And then once we started getting that, it's like, okay, now that we're getting shots, now let's focus on the quality of shots that we're taking. And so we spent like 4 games in a row, you know, just talking about shot quality and the math equation that we used to determine our shot quality. And every time that we had success with that, boy, we celebrated it and we showed it and we're like, you know, look at this. And, you know, so that's just an example of it. So I agree with you there that focusing on those achievable goals one step at a time, I think that's a really, really good thing, a really good place to start at. Coaches, are you looking for a way to improve not only your players, but your parents' perspectives on what they should expect when they come to your program at the high school level? Well, A Pen and a Napkin has something for you, your families, your players, your parents, and maybe even yourself as well. Varsity Preparation Academy. The first annual Varsity Preparation Academy is going to take place May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska, at Omaha Marion High School. That's at 7400 Military Avenue here in Omaha. This is for girls basketball players grades 6 through 9 going into the 25-26 school year. VPA is all about educating parents and players to prepare themselves for the varsity sports experience, both on and off the floor. I'm taking all the things that I've learned in my career from all the camps that I've gone to, all the camps that I've worked, all the stuff that I've done on my own here, from USA Basketball to Snow Valley to Point Guard College to the stuff that I've done, and we're combining it all into one really, really intense weekend to help these future varsity athletes get ready for the varsity level. We're going to work on skill sessions on the floor. We're going to have many sessions on the floor talking about important things about the, you know, like why coaches substitute, the importance of routine, different things like that. And then we're going to have classroom sessions where we're going to sit down and talk about different things that are going to be important for the development of the player and the parent. We're also going to have a parent meeting to talk to parents about what to expect in the high school experience, what they should be looking for as their child goes through this. So coaches, pass this on to your players, to your parents. I think it's going to be a really, really good deal. It's $175 for the weekend. That's literally less than $10 an hour that they're going to pay to get this great experience, t-shirts, binders for note-taking, all sorts of different things. Meals are going to be provided. We are going to take care of your players and your parents. A Pen and a Napkin is going to be there to help you out. Always done that, and we're going to do this once again on a different wavelength, on a different level, with the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska. Another thing I think, and it's kind of related to it, Tony, is keeping your standards consistent. If you came into the season and you said, let's just talk about something, let's say off the floor, you know, you're supposed to be in the weight room 45 minutes before practice on Saturday mornings. We get our lifts in, should take us a half hour, then we get 15 minutes to warm up, and then we're going. And you start slacking on that type of stuff, or you know, those details of things, a lot of times those things kind of snowball. And once you let go of the line with those type of standards, that's where some struggles can happen here. The kids start talking, you start losing a little bit of confidence in them. Keep your standards consistent, and especially when you're doing well, you keep those standards consistent. Don't get fat and happy. You got to stay consistent with that, and keep those standards consistent all the way through your program. So I think that's another thing you can do.
Yeah, I think a lot of times coaches talk about rules, and don't get me wrong, I think rules are important. You have to have a few of them, but I like the word used there. It's standard. That's not the way that we do things here. You know, and it really becomes powerful when it's not you saying it, when it's your player saying it to other players. And so I like that word standard there. Mm-hmm. The next one that I had would be, you can kind of mention that they're struggling. Maybe there's a chemistry issue. And sometimes what you can do that can help is put the basketballs away and do some type of team bonding activity. I know mm-hmm. you've talked about, you know, different things that you've done with your team. I've heard a team around here last week. They didn't practice, they went bowling.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny how many of those stories that you hear about a team that was kind of off the rails, if you will.
Yep.
And then got the car driven up out of the ditch and back on the road again, doing something like that, where they focused on chemistry and off the court bonding things rather than, you know, getting back in the gym and continuing to kind of beat a dead horse, if you will. They're focusing on things that build trust. And I think that's a big characteristic of teams that are connected, as well as camaraderie. And I think those are important items.
Yes. You know, they don't need to be reminded sometimes that they're struggling. They're pretty well aware that they're struggling at now. They can look up at the scoreboard and see that as well. You know, so I think that you're right there, Tony. And we've done that when things have been good. We've done that when things haven't been good. Sometimes it's worked, sometimes it hasn't. You know, we tried this thing this one year where we were really struggling with chemistry, and it wasn't like the kids didn't like each other, but we had 13 kids vying for 8 spots and everybody thought they should be playing, you know, type of a thing. And so we had that, and nobody played well enough for us to narrow it down to 8 or 9 kids, you know? So, we came up with this great idea. We're going to bring them to an escape room and they're going to have to work together and really cooperate and understand that everybody has a role and all this other stuff. And did it work? No. It didn't. It was rough. You know, it was really rough. So, you know, it's not a guarantee. Now, do I regret trying it? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You know, you've, and it wasn't a surprise for us to have a day like that. The purpose of it was maybe a little bit different than what they thought. You know, they just thought they were going to an escape room, but we were kind of hoping, you know, we'd have that magical aha Disney movie moment of, oh, I really enjoyed working with you, Becky. Hey, you know what? We both have strengths that we can bring to the group. Let's go off and, you know, and yeah, it didn't work, you know, so, yeah, you know, so you try that stuff, and I agree, you know, you give it a go. So, when you are in the gym, here's my next one here, Tony. When you are in the gym, you just keep the focus about today. I think when you're struggling, when your team needs something, they don't need to hear any more about what has happened. They don't need to worry about what is going to happen. Let's just get better today, you know, and that, again, kind of the what I was talking about with the whole Belichick thing earlier, you know, let's get 1% better today. You know, my players used to just make fun of me, and fine, so be it. I could take it, you know, yeah, let's just get 1% better today. I bet you're going to say that. Yeah, I am, you know, because it's let's just focus on today. Yesterday's over with, tomorrow's not here yet, so let's just focus on today. And I think especially when you're struggling, let's just focus on the here and now. Let's focus. And, you know, kind of, again, talking about what we both talked about earlier with the process. But, you know, especially when you keep going back, this is why we lost to West High. You don't stink and rebound. You know, and you lose it and you're going nuts or whatever. You know, that probably hurts more than it helps. And so I think that's in your coaching style and your communication, you got to keep the focus on the here and now.
Yeah. And it's like you mentioned, Marty, you can't hop in a time machine and go back and change the past, and the future's not here yet. So control what you can control, which would be the here and the now. And you know, you're not setting some astronomical goal. Hey, we're going to get 25% better today. No, we're going to get 1% better, hopefully for 25 straight days. And that's going to make a huge difference if that happens. But yeah, focus on what you can control at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. What else you got, buddy?
I've heard this a lot too, when teams kind of lose their way, and they get into a turnaround. What'd you do? What was the magic? What was the magic thing that happened there? We got back to the basics.
I knew you were going to say that.
How often does that happen? We kind of lost our way. We got into running, 25 different sets and lobs and this, that, and the other. And then, hey, it was about jump stops. It was about, pass fakes. It was about being in a proper defensive stance. It was about communication. It was about, moving the ball side to side, not putting on an and one mixtape tour with our dribbling expedition. We just got back to the basics. And I think that's something that's so very, very important. If you don't ever leave them, you don't have to go back to them. And so hopefully, coaches can have that as their compass, if you will, and stay with the basics so that they know where they're going and know what's going on.
With the more knowledge that I gained in my coaching career, Tony, the simpler I kept it. And some people, by watching us, might say, "Oh, God, you look like you did a lot of stuff." Well, maybe we did a few things with a lot of tweaks to it, or a lot of variations to it. But it was our practices, by and large, were very, very similar for on a daily basis. With some changes in it, obviously. We weren't going to do the same practice every day for 3 weeks straight, but the basic structure of practice was roughly the same. A lot of the concepts we did was the same, and definitely lesson learned there, Tony. Again, going back to earlier in my career, guilty as charged. Well, we need another play to get Mary set up for a three. No, we just need to run this play, and it's the we put this play in on day three, and it's day 42, and we're still not running it correctly, So don't worry about another one when you're not running the first play correctly, So I agree with you. Keeping it simple, being smart about that. So, the next thing, and this was something I was always I tried to be really, really sensitive about, Tony. You've got to be smart, in my opinion, be smart with your lineup changes. Confidence is a very fickle, fickle thing. Very few people are just brutally confident regardless of the situation. And so if you are struggling and you have a player who's not very confident, and they're starting, and then all of a sudden you take them out and you don't play them at all the next game, or you take them out of the lineup and then you put them back in the lineup, and then you're doing all this shuffling around and different things like that. I think that is something that we as coaches are really, really guilty of, is shuffling a bunch of different lineups around and just trying to throw a bunch of spaghetti up on the wall and see what sticks. I think it's really important that if and when, and I've made lineup changes before, Tony. I'm not saying that you don't make lineup changes. You do. But you've got to be really smart. You've got to think it through. It is damaging. I don't, it's rare to find a player who has started X amount of games, and then you say, "You're no longer starting anymore. We're going to start this other kid ahead of you." That can, if you started that kid for 8 games in a row, and then on the ninth and the tenth one, and you're taking them out, they're going to feel like, "Well, I must be the reason why we suck in the eyes of the coaches, or that we're not playing as well as we would like to." So clearly communicate when you're making lineup changes, explain it. I always, when I made a lineup change, especially a starting lineup change, I always went up to the player who I was taking out of the lineup. I told them first and explained to them what was going on. Then I went up to the kid who was replacing them in the starting lineup to let them know that they were starting. I didn't want it to get back. I didn't, I, that I owed it to my player that they hear it from me that they are not starting, especially if they have started quite a few games, that they needed to hear that from me and not from somebody else. So, when you are struggling, again, I'm not saying don't make lineup changes. I made lineup changes. I understand the need for lineup changes. Been there, done that. And some of those changes were positive. Most of them were. Some of them didn't work. But be smart about how you do it, because you've got to keep that kid engaged within your program.
thing I like that you said there was to think it through. Because a lot of times I think coaches can be guilty of making change for change's sake when things aren't going well. And, you know, confidence is a funny thing. When you think you can, you're probably right. You think you can't, you're definitely right. And, you know, if you are yanking a kid around and playing mind games with them, that's hard, especially for a high school kid to have to experience and go through. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that you said that I really appreciate as well is, and I try to do this as well, whenever you're going to make a change, you owe it to both. You owe it to the kid that you're going to sit to explain why. And then you also owe it to the kid that's going to hop in, the explanation for them as well. Mm-hmm. And so I like that because, again, where there's a lack of communication, negativity can fill it. Yep. And when you don't explain it to a kid, I'm not good enough. Coach doesn't believe me anymore. And those might be for the furthest thing from the truth of what you're trying to do. But if you don't go in and have that conversation, those will be thoughts that come across their mind.
Yep. Yep. I got two more things, Tony. What do you got?
Yeah. The next one I would go with is this. When you're going through a tough time in your season, coach-led teams, it's important that the coach leads, don't get me wrong, but in order to really get the plane flying again, you got to empower your leaders. And I think when bad times happen, it truly does reveal who your leaders are. And as a coach, if you have those players who are naturally gifted as leaders, you have to empower them. And so you want to identify, you want to help to cultivate and develop them. And again, there are different types of leadership styles. There's vocal, there's by example and stuff like that. But you hope that these leaders can step up and help to right the ship, so to speak. But mm-hmm. I think empowering leaders during these difficult times is another very important step that a coach can take.
Yeah. I think that's when you communicate with your leaders the most. Hey, you know, and I think a good question that you need to ask your leaders when you're struggling, what do you need from me? What do you need from me? You know, again, everybody can read the score, and this kind of ties into one of my next ones here, Tony. They need you to pick them up. You know, unless they're not playing hard, you know, I had two rules, basically. You know, if you're playing as if three rules, if you're a great teammate, if you're playing as hard as you can and you're concentrating to the best of your ability, then it's up to me to coach you and teach you. And I'm not going to yell at you, you know, but, you know, what do you need from me? And maybe, you know, they'll surprise you. Maybe they'll say, coach, you know, you're doing everything. And that's happened to me. You know, I've had that conversation, coach. We, you know, it's just us. We got to start playing better. We got to start hitting shots, or we got to rebound better, or whatever. Or, you know, sometimes they'll say, hey, you know, coach, we're just really tired. Can we shorten practice a little bit today? I think that'll help us. And then we're, you know, let's be ready to go tomorrow, or, you know, just certain things like that. But those open and honest conversations are really important. And if they are your leaders, you need to trust that they are going to be the voice of your program and the voice of the other players. And you need to establish a relationship with them that they are going to trust, that they can tell you the truth and you're not going to get upset with them. But they need you to pick them up. They can read the scoreboard too. You come in and you're yelling, kicking, screaming, especially when the kids are giving you everything that they have. That's just going to take things, and it's just going to send it south, in my opinion. Yeah, what do you think, buddy?
Yeah, you know, it's important that there's camaraderie, there's trust, there's those things that you're pulling the rope together. And when you start to blame and point fingers, that only divides.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I've got one more thing. What do you got?
My last one would be this. I think you have to sit down and watch film with them. And you might have already been doing this, but I'm talking a little bit more intensive. You know, if you're not rotating, if you're not doing what you say, I think sometimes when we say stuff to kids, like, as this coach, I'm doing that. And then all of a sudden you show them on film, hey, I need you to do this right here. Oh, I didn't do that. And so I think if you can go in and review those games, watching game footage where they can see the mistakes and they can identify not just the mistakes, but what they're doing well, also it can allow you to them to trust you. Mm-hmm. And it also can allow you, when you make adjustments in future game, well, he said this last time and I didn't think he was right, but he showed me on a film and he is right here. It allows you to be able to make some of those adjustments going down the road as well.
Yep. Yep. Wholeheartedly agree. You gotta, you know, film doesn't lie, right? You know, I mean, it doesn't lie, and you can use that film in so many different ways, to point out mistakes, to point out successes, to point out, you know, the emphasis that you've been talking about since day one. And there's no excuse for any of us not to use it, because it's literally at our fingertips everywhere that we go. So agree with you there, Tony. Last thing that I have, be smart with how you address your team. And again, some successes, some mistakes that I made in my career, you have to know what you're going to say and how you're going to say it in front of your team. Sometimes you just have to stay on script. And when you start going off into a certain direction, intentionally, unintentionally, you've lost your fourth game in a row and now you're fit to be tied and you explode or whatever, you gotta be, or you start being sarcastic or whatever, you start just doing things that aren't good. And yeah, it's just based off emotion. But you got to take that emotion. You got to set it aside. You've got to be really, really smart with how you address your team, what you say to them, how you say it, and make sure that, you, like I said, you're building them up. They can read the scoreboard too. It's about growth and growth and growth and process and, you know, making sure that you are, there's a lot of season left to go. You've got to keep building and building and building, because the house is far from being built at this point of the season. And if you think your house is built at this point in the season, you're going to be giving me and Tony a call here in about a week or two, because you're going to be falling flat on your face. You're not going to be happy with it. You've got to keep moving it forward.
Yeah, this is the time where good teams can go to great. Average teams can become above average. Mediocre teams can take a step or two forward as well. But this is the point in time where, as a coach, your motivation is super important, because you're hitting the dog days of January. You know, it seems like January is the, you know, just goes on and on forever, you know, and it's one of those things where this is the point in time where your motivation tactics are going to be tested, and the truly good coaches at motivating can really kind of finesse through this time and keep holding that carrot out in front of them. Hey, February's right around the corner. Hey, playoffs are right around the corner. You know, and different things like that, and keep them focused and keep them motivated as they try to keep improving.
Coaches, I am really excited to announce this year's lineup for our 5th annual Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. This year's clinic date is Saturday, April the 12th. It's going to take place at Mary R. Queen Gymnasium, located at 3405 South 119th Street here in Omaha. We've got three on-court demonstrators. Andy King, the head boys basketball coach at Elkhorn North High School, will get the day started with his clinic on developing your team through 5-on-5 controlled scrimmages. Jody Steyer, my good friend from Iowa State University, the associate head coach at Iowa State with the women's basketball team, is going to talk about individual player development in small group settings. Jamie Smith, the head girls basketball coach at Solon High School in Iowa, one of the best I've ever seen, teach about shooting fundamentals, is going to talk to us about how to put together a great shooting workout for your players. Coach Smith won a state championship last year at the Class 3A level in Iowa. Those are three on-court demonstrators. Then we're going to have three off-court demonstrators. Our lunch keynote speaker is my guy Raz Vanderloo, the head boys basketball coach at Sioux City East High School. And also, Raz is very involved with USA basketball. I'm just going to let Raz cook. He's going to talk to us just with a basketball smorgasbord of topics about what Raz wants to talk about that day. Then we're going to have two smaller breakout sessions. Lucas Dollinghouse, the head boys basketball coach at Johnson Brock here in high school, highly successful program. He's also an administrator, and he's going to talk about coaching through an administrator's eyes along with some other things. Our other breakout session is weekday Wade Coulter, the head girls basketball coach at Gretna East High School, and he's going to talk about building a pressured defensive system. One of the great things about the Pen and a Napkin Clinic is, in addition to our presenters, we also have two designated breakout sessions where you will get the opportunity to discuss various topics with other coaches attending the clinic. These sessions are a great way to pick the brains of your peers at the clinic, and it's one of the most enjoyable points of our annual clinic. And then, hey, after a long day of learning about hoops, it's time to kick back and relax. We're going to have an optional post-clinic social at Wine 121. It's right down the street from Mary R. Queen, about a mile, mile and a half down the road. I want to thank my friend TK, Tom Crable, for opening his doors to the clinic again. It's just $15 per coach for anybody that wants to join us there. Our Pen and a Napkin Clinic is one of the most affordable clinics in America. I mean, it is really, really, really affordable. You're going to get over 7 hours worth of information. That's $60 for a coach. If you're just a singular coach that wants to come up and check it out, it's $60 a coach. If you bring yourself and another coach from your staff, it's $110. Three coaches from your staff, $150. If you bring four or more coaches from your staff, it is only $45 per coach. We've got a sliding scale. It's all about getting better at an affordable price. So if you are interested in signing up for our Pen and a Napkin Clinic, look to the flyer on Twitter and mail it in. You can scan it in. You can do all those different things, or you can DM me on Twitter, or you can email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Registrations are due by Thursday, April the 10th, 2025. Coaches, do not miss out on one of the best coaching clinics in America. Well, Tony, you know who has never lacked for motivation.
Europe, because they get better every set, every concert.
1% better every time they take the floor, every time they take the stage, and every time they are on the coaching staff. Mr. Viss, are you ready for this week's trivia question?
Let's do it.
All right. Hopefully you handle the trivia better than you handled the numbers this week.
So. 1 out of 4.
Yeah. Hey, if you were a baseball player, that'd be an all right day at the plate. So don't kick yourself down too bad. So, all right. Kind of a local news story here, a local story that was a national story. Iowa State women's basketball had an amazing streak broken this week. They had a streak of 945 consecutive games that they had played that they had made a three-point shot. Tony, this streak began, here's the question for you, Tony. How many national championships had UConn won before Iowa State's 945 game winning streak began?
I think I read this, and I want to say zero.
Yes, and it counts. Tony D. Viss from the baseline. Absolutely on top of it, yes.
The last time that Iowa State did not make a three-point shot was in February of 1995. UConn won their first of 11 national championships. They've won 11 national championships since the last time Iowa State women's basketball played a game without making a three-point shot.
So it's a little bit of perspective on that one.
Yes. In fact, it makes you want to say,
how about that?
God, Mel Allen is on fire. Yes. So, I mean, just let's talk about it. I mean, 945 games, Tony. That's 30 over 30 years. You know, they came close a couple of times with not keeping that streak intact, and they got the win in the game that they didn't get it. I mean, it is quite an amazing deal for Coach Fenley and Coach Steyer and all our friends at Iowa State, Tony.
It is, you know, and the thing that they asked about after it, and Audie Crooks and some of the ladies on the current team are like, yeah, we just needed a win. I hate that the streak ended. We just needed a win. Mm-hmm. And so snapped that losing streak at that time. And so just very impressive. And there was a lot of different things they put into context with that whole streak that it went on. But yeah, it's just a very mind-boggling and weighty streak that they had.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little NBA, Tony. Early in the year, we were, amongst other people, we were very concerned about the Denver Nuggets, and they were off to a very, very slow start. And in particular, Jamal Murray was off to a very, very slow start. But lo and behold, the Nuggets are starting to get things going. They are 26-16. They are in fourth place in the competitive Western Conference, just a couple of games behind the Houston Rockets for second place. This Jokic guy is doing some nice things for them. But the real reason why they're really starting to play better is Jamal Murray. He is really starting to score the ball with much more efficiency, starting to get a little more spring in his step. He's above 20 points a game now. He's averaging 6 assists a game now. He's not going to lead the Nuggets in assists because Jokic is essentially averaging a triple-double. He's a tenth of a point away from assists. He's at 9.9 assists a game. So that's hard to match. But as Murray is going, the Nuggets seem to be ticking up in the standings. And how much of that is just, hey, we got to remember this guy was the second best player on the NBA champions a couple years ago. Maybe we just need to let him figure it out here a little bit and kind of give him a little grace period.
You know, he didn't play well in the Olympics either.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you had kind of a rough season for him last year, didn't play great in the Olympics, and then a little bit of a slow start this year. But the one thing go back to is Mike Malone. And Mike Malone stuck with him, believed in him, and expressed that, let him know that. And then Jamal has played very well for basically about the last 20 games. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, kudos to him, because I think a lesser player would have lost confidence, would have struggled, and begin to question themselves. But kudos to Jamal Murray and the Nuggets. They will be a tough outcome playoffs. You know, they're developing some depth. Russell Westbrook has been inserted in the starting lineup, and this has kind of coincided with them playing better. They've only had Aaron Gordon about half the season, uh-huh. But you're seeing guys like Peyton Watson and Julian Strother who are becoming key players for them. And now Denver, it looks like, has a rotation about 8-9 guys that's pretty solid. And so, you know, I could see them winning a game, could see them winning a series or two in the postseason in the West. And the West is really tough.
Yeah. I really didn't have Russell Westbrook on my bingo card for, yeah, let's put him in the starting lineup and things will go better. But again, kudos to Mike Malone for making that move and for Westbrook adjusting. And they're doing some really nice things here. You know, Westbrook's up to 13 points a game. His counting statistics have always been fine. But I think the big thing is Aaron Gordon has only been in the lineup, like you said, Tony, for half the season. So the Nuggets are kind of starting to figure, and when you have the best player, or at the very least, the second best player, you might Shai Gilgeous-Alexander might be the league MVP this year, but I still think Jokic might be the best player. You have the opportunity. It allows for your margin of error around him to be a little bit, you know, more lenient, if you will. So, yeah, so kudos to the Nuggets, closet Nuggets fan. Happy to see them kind of get going here as well. So Coaches, are you looking for a great sports story to read? Then look no further than Kings of Their Court, the story of three great high school basketball teams in the heartland of America, Millard North, Bellevue West, and Creighton Prep, all out of Omaha, Nebraska, all ranked in the top 25 in the country for the 2020-21 season in the middle of so much chaos that we all lived through. COVID quarantine, politics, racial issues, some of the best players that the city of Omaha has ever produced, and the stories of them, their parents, and their coaches all wrapped up into one here. All you need to do is go to Amazon.com, type in Kings of Their Court, and order yourself a copy today. Coaches, go check out Kings of Their Court. Tony, I got a question for you here. Not sure how you feel about it. That's why I'm going to ask you that question. Is it time to get rid of the handshake line after games?
I'm going to go with no. There's a part of me that thinks that if we do, we're stealing an important lesson away from players. And yeah, I think the whole transfer NIL is stealing lessons from players because, hey, go where the grass is greener. Don't stick here and tough it out and become a better version of yourself. Just transfer out of here. Get out of the hard. And this is another one where, yes, games are emotional. Yes, it sucks to lose. But at the same time, it's okay to have to learn to, you know, humble yourself a little bit and shake the opponent's hand and congratulate them on the win. So there's a part of me that wants to say yes, because some of the ugly incidences that are happening after games, but I think we're going to steal another thing from kids if we don't teach them that lesson of it's okay to humble yourself after the other team beats you and say, hey, good game.
Yeah, I agree with you. Does it feel like there's more and more incidents like this after games?
Well, there are.
Yeah,
there are. Yeah, I mean, the evidence is out there. There are.
Yeah. And the reason why I brought it up, there was a deal yesterday between, I think it was Xavier and Marquette. Jeff Capel got into it. The head coach at Pittsburgh, Jeff Capel, former Duke Blue Devil, got into it with some kid. Maybe it was Florida State or something like that. He put up a shot with like 3 seconds left, and they were up 10. And he went after the kid in the handshake line, you know, that type of thing. And I don't know what's the answer though. How do we prevent this from happening other than just don't be an idiot?
I think adults need to be adults and model the proper behavior for their players. You know, we talk about on here practicing a variety of things. One of the things you might need to start practicing with your team is shaking the other side's hand, you know, after a scrimmage amongst your own players, because it gets heat in practice sometimes too.
Yeah.
And I just think it's an important deal. But adults have to be adults, and they have to model proper behavior for their players and go over expectations. Hey, you don't have to have a deep conversation with them, but it's okay to tell them good game and shake their hand, high five them, or whatever the case may be. I think it's an important thing for people to learn.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's going to come a point in time if this keeps up where we've got to say no more.
Yeah. It is interesting. And I think, you know, the adults have to be better. I agree with you there, Tony. If there is an incident, boy, you nip it in the bud right away. And, you know, fellas, this isn't going to happen anymore. Ladies, this isn't going to happen anymore. We've got to be gracious in victory and humble in defeat. And these are discussions that you need to have with your team and make sure that you do this the right way. We, you know, we practice timeouts. We practice all these intangible things. I know we practiced timeouts. We practiced halftime. Yeah, you know, we practiced pregame warmups. You know, maybe it's a thing where, hey, we are going to practice being gracious in victory and humble in defeat. And we're going to literally practice how to do postgame handshakes. And this is how we do it here. You know, might not be a bad idea, Tony. Look at that. We came up with something.
Some unique and original for us.
Yes, yes. Well, Tony, you know what else is unique and original? Well, Who's up and who's down, Tony? Who's moving on up for you this week, Mr. Viss?
The team that I'm going to say that's moving on up, I'm going to stay in women's basketball this week. I'm going with the South Carolina Gamecocks. They played Oklahoma, who was rated 13th, which I think is pretty impressive, and beat them by 40.
Yeah, I saw that score. I didn't see any of the game, but I saw the score. Yep. You know, after seeing that score, even, you know, that would be one that Ron Burgundy would announce and say, that was quite impressive. You ate a whole wheel of cheese? That was impressive.
I would say something like that.
Yeah. I think the Gamecocks have kind of figured out some things, Tony, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, I know UCLA is rated number one, and I'd love to see them run the table, South Carolina run the table, and meet the national championship for it all. But We'll see what happens. There's a lot of season left.
Does South Carolina still have UConn on their schedule? I think they do.
I believe so. I believe so.
Let me see if I can find that here. Here's my team that I'm up in. I'm going to stay in college basketball, but I'm going to go to the men's side. And as Austin Powers would say, I think somebody's got their mojo back. And that mojo would be with Tom Izzo and the Michigan State Spartans. It feels like old school Sparty right now, Tony. They are 16-2. They just had a big win today. I believe it was against Illinois. I could be wrong with that, yes. They are balanced. They are deep. They are playing with discipline. It feels like Sparty again, kind of the Sparty that we started associating with for 25 plus years. And Coach Izzo hasn't had, you know, he's had good teams. He's made a couple of decent runs in the tournament the last few years, but we haven't seen that number one seed. Just powerhouse Spartan team for a while, and I think Coach Izzo kind of has that rolling right now. They look awfully good right now.
They do. They beat Illinois today, and Illinois is really, really good. They're undefeated in conference play, as you mentioned, and it'll be interesting because the Big Ten is lacking a premier team, and could Michigan State be that premier team for the Big Ten?
They very well could be. They are really good. Purdue is starting to kind of round into shape as well. I mean, this Big Ten is just and we watch, you know, obviously we're in Big Ten country, both of us, so we spend a lot of time watching Big Ten basketball. But you got, you know, Michigan State and Purdue. You know, Nebraska's got a nice team this year, and both of those teams on their home floors just took them behind the woodshed and kicked the snot out of them. I mean, they were just at a completely another level here. So I think that, I think Izzo and Purdue, Izzo and Michigan State, and then along with Purdue, but then don't forget about Illinois, you know, Oregon, which of course makes sense in the Big Ten, is right there. There's a lot of basketball to be played, but it is crazy competitive. So, Tony, who's down for you?
I saw this headline the other day, and so I put a little bit of time in exploring a little bit, and the Stanford women are in danger of not making the NCAA tournament for the first time in a really, really long time. And I think you probably thought, well, there's going to be some regression with not having the great Tara Vanderveer there, but I don't think they saw this much. And I know their best returning player transferred to USC, but still, yeah. It's Stanford.
Yeah. I'm looking at it. They're 10-8. They're 13th in the ACC, which of course makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. And with that 10-8, they started out 7-1. So help me with the math here, Tony. 3-7 in their last 10. And two of those wins are by 3 points over Wake Forest and 5 points over Florida State. So Ohio State waxed them pretty well. Clemson, North Carolina State beat them pretty convincingly in Maples by 14. So, Yeah, Tony, this is a really, really good call. Duke just beat him by 25 this weekend. So, yeah, this is kind of the world turned upside down here with Stanford struggling in this way. Like you said, Tony, it's hard to replace the legend. You want to be the person who replaces the person who replaced the legend. But the Cardinal are not going. They are in a place that they are definitely not used to being in.
That is true. And they've seemed like they're fighting for the Final Four and conference championships and top 10 rankings all the time, just like a rite of passage.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Tony, for me, the team I am down on right now is my Boston Celtics. I don't want to say it's panic time, but they are 8-8 in their last 16 games. They lost a silly game today. Something happened at the end. They had a silly foul on Trae Young right at the end of the game. They're not shooting it as well as they did last year. Now, how much of that is tired legs? How much is that just it's December and January, and it's kind of a little bit of the dog days of the NBA season? I don't know. But it's starting to become a little bit concerning. They are kind of in a situation where they really, unless something really crazy happens, they're going to have a really, it's going to be nearly impossible for them to catch Cleveland for the number one seed. And right now the Knicks are nipping at their heels for the two seed in the Eastern Conference. So, you know, they're still good. I mean, I'm not, you know, they're 29-13, but 8-8 in their last 16 games, Tony, with a team with this type of talent, and they've had a few knickknack injuries here and there, but they're just not playing the way that we kind of expect the Boston Celtics to play.
You know, and I think it's hard once you climb to the top of the mountain to stay up there. You're maybe not as hungry, don't play as hard as you usually do, and maybe you think you can flip the switch and different things like that. And to be honest with you, once they get to the playoffs, they may be able to do that, but it's one of those things where with the Celtics, maybe it's a lack of motivation right now, and the loss to the Hawks isn't super concerning. It was the one before that where they were the Raptors looked like crap. I was thinking about seeing if I could get a 10-day contract with them. And the Raptors beat them by 13 to snap a 10-game losing streak. That's the one that's concerning. But at the same time, Joe Mazzulla will do a fantastic job, get them focused. But like you mentioned, they're going to have to beat Cleveland in the playoffs most likely to get to the finals. And Cleveland will have the home court advantage. Now, one of the things I think in order for Cleveland to be able to compete and beat the Celtics is they have to have home court advantage.
Yeah.
And so it will be interesting to see, you know, how things shake out over the last half. But obviously, they're 42 games in, which is a little over halfway through the regular season before the real season matters.
Yeah, I agree. You know, they do have the advantage of having been there and done that. And so you do give them some grace. Again, it's that fine line of how much grace do we give. They have been there. They have done that. Tatum and Brown are still in their prime. Porzingis coming back from injury. Derek White is still really good. Peyton Pritchard playing great off the bench. But I do agree with you that Cleveland's best chance of beating them is getting home court. But how much energy will they expend trying to get that home court over the duration of the season? You know, we'll find out in probably April and May and June. So, all right, episode 116, Igniting a Struggling Team. Tony, any last words that you have for this particular topic this week?
You know, do some of the minor things. Make smart goals. Measurable is going to be important. Don't make change just for change's sake. Keep your poise and composure. Understand words have weight, and if you just rip them, you're probably going to make a bad situation even worse.
Yeah, I agree. think about what you're going to do. Take your time. You're lying awake at 2 o'clock in the morning staring at your ceiling anyway. So don't rush into anything. Try to keep things as analytical, as measured as you possibly can, and be there to pick your kids up. They know they're struggling. They know they're not. And again, there's different reasons. Sometimes you do need to get, you know, if you have players that are being selfish, yeah, sometimes you got to have a little, one-sided conversation, I guess, you know, or whatever you want to say. But overall, the kids need you to pick them up. There's a key thing missing, and you just got to keep searching. You got to keep digging. It seems like there's not a lot of season left. There is a lot of season. You just got to keep fighting until there's no more opportunity to fight anymore. And you owe it to your kids, to your parents, to your school to do that. So. Episode 116, Igniting a Struggling Team. Hope folks have enjoyed this. Got a lot of great things going on with a pen and a napkin. We got our coaches clinic in April. Got a great lineup for that. Just announced this weekend, the Varsity Preparation Academy, May 3rd and 4th here in Omaha. I think it's got a chance to be a really, really good thing. I mean, we're going to work with kids and parents to help get them ready to play for you at the varsity level. Now, this year, it's just going to be a girls-only event. We're looking to expand that into a girls and boys camp next year, but we're going to play the hand that we're dealt this year. We're going to give it a go on the girls' side. Find all that information. Go to apenandanapkin.com. Find it on Twitter, DM me, email me, whatever you need. I think it's just going to be a really, really great event, and it's going to help your players, whether it's your daughter or whether it's your players in your program. It's going to help them get ready to play for you. So get that checked out. A lot of really great things coming along here. So for Tony DeVis, coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.